Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday the 13th of December, and I'm recording at, it's 9:55 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, just in terms of my own production here today, it's been a bit of a frustrating spell because broadband is really working quite slowly here. I've been able to write some copy, not as much as I would like, but I haven't been able to get my emails, for instance, and that really is annoying because there have been so many important emails, not least in terms of the new service and debugging and all that. I have talked to Owen. I know that he's got another report which will be going up quite shortly, and I look forward rather to catching up with my emails next week. Now, let's just take a quick look at some of the developments of the last week. Here, we've certainly seen a softening tone in stock markets, and one of the reasons for that, clearly, I would say, is that there's uncertainty over this Fed meeting. It's the last one which has Ben Bernanke in charge before Janet Yellen takes over. And the opinion's fairly evenly divided as to whether or not he is going to commence tapering or to postpone it. You can argue it both ways, and I've said in my earlier audios that, you know, we'd have to be a fly on the wall in their meeting room to know what they're actually going to do. But, you know, hey, it's coming up Christmas. That's an important holiday in the United States for sure. And I think in terms of changes, big changes, and beginning tapering and coming up with some other targets to ensure people or to reassure people that interest rates are going to stay low, those are big steps, sort of unknown steps. And it's easier to procrastinate, in other words, postpone it and not do much. So I don't know. But my guess is if they postpone, that you might see a very brief push, a little bit of short covering on Wall Street. But I think the market will have a hard time going higher from here overall. And the healthiest thing by far would be to see a pullback and mean reversion test, and it would probably be might be a little bit more than that. But the less stabilizing development would be if we had a continued push to the upside, becoming even more overextended, and creating a little bit more in the way of minor bubble development activities, and that could then lead to a much sharper reaction, which always follows those clear overextensions to the upside. Okay, that's, I think, the main development here in stock markets, mostly soft, Wall Street losing momentum in here, and we've had a few little signals, at least warning signals. The S&P has a small downside weekly key this week. Japan, one of my favorite markets all year, and for the medium term, that had a weekly key reversal last week and is backing off high that marked the onset of the medium-term consolidation that I think is in its latter stages here right now. But I don't think Japan can run up if Wall Street's pulling back. But we'll see. We will see. Generally, on stock markets, there are very few that can match Wall Street's persistence to the upside, and we then need to ask on that basis, well, what's Wall Street got going for it? And if you've been listening to these Friday audios in particular, you'll know my view and Owen's view on this quite well. And the U.S. has a lot of things going for it. Don't look at the growth rate, which is slow. Don't look at the politics, which are, well, I don't even say the sort of political impasse that you have there. Don't look at the employment figures and all those things. But so there are lots of medium term factors that are holding this economy up, but the longer term benefits, I think, are incredibly attractive. And I would start with the competitive energy position. That gives the U.S. a huge advantage. And I've got a couple of articles here. I'll post one of them today. And that is that it was written in the headline about Britain, but it really applies to a lot of other countries as well, that their chemical industries are under severe pressure because they can't compete with the USA. In terms of energy costs, chemical companies, as you know, they are, for the most part, these industrial chemical companies are using prodigious amounts of energy to produce their excellent products, and they're having to pay too much for it in the UK, in Europe, and in the Asian nations. So what's that mean? It means that the companies are losing profits, that the management are under pressure to shift to the USA. That's a theme that I've been talking about quite a lot over the last year. And that means job losses and business revenue losses in the countries that are losing their chemical industries, and it won't be limited just to chemical industries, you can be sure of that. There will be plenty of others that would be similarly affected. So really, there's a medium to longer term trend of having seen what some referred to as a gradual disindustrialization of the U.S. In earlier decades, bit of an exaggeration, that term, but it's picking up in the sense that more businesses are moving to the U.S. U.S. companies are opening up a little bit more within the big multinational U.S. companies, opening up a little bit more in the U.S., and foreign companies also opening up in the U.S., and one of the key reasons for that is, of course, the energy advantages that they have there. It also helps that the U.S. is a major consuming nation, and they want to sell more there as well. Now, another factor that first I want to stay with this energy thing, because all these other countries could catch up, and I think they will ultimately catch up. But I see it's discouraging for me here in the UK that, you know, the government is tiptoeing around and is terrified of offending anybody because they don't want to be losing or alienating any possible voters. And so we're not getting decisive leadership here. We have a coalition government, and that can be a challenge, and it is. And they're worried about the next election, which I think is in May 2015 at the latest. And they're behind in the polls on that. So even though the UK economy is doing better than the continental European economies right now, it would be doing a whole lot better if they had commenced fracking with gusto, let's say a couple of years ago. But that hasn't happened, and I don't know when it is actually going to happen. The other factor here is the technology lead. Now, some countries are not involved in fracking because they don't know how to do it, and they're a little bit reluctant to cut a lucrative deal for some of the oil companies that could help them in this department. And that takes me onto the USA's technology advantage. Well, it invented fracking, at least in terms of any commercial application of this. But it's not just in fracking where we see the USA's technology lead. It's really right across the boards, and it's a growing lead. And I have been fascinated and somewhat surprised to see this developing over the last few years. I think I've been most aware of it since the 2008 crash, and but it, nevertheless, it is a reality, and the U.S. is not only regaining its technology lead in many fields where that had been somewhat eroded during the two previous decades, but the only exception to that being in the information technology field. But it's pulling away. So it's a lead that's actually increasing, and we are in an era, I have said in these broadcasts, of accelerating technological innovation. And unlike stock market accelerations, which tend to be short to medium term developments and then they end badly, the accelerating technological innovation, well, there's no real reason why that needs to stop, and that they're not going to run out of things to invent, and they're not going to run out of the capability to enhance the productivity and the intelligence of their smart machines. It'll have to be something totally unrelated, some sort of draconian black swan, whatever you want to call it, exogenous event is probably the best description that actually ends this accelerating phase of technology. And with any luck, that won't happen for a few million years. Okay. So, the U.S. has energy and the big technology advantage, and it also has a lot of these global autonomies. That it has more global autonomies than any other economy, and they are doing extremely, extremely well. And we're in an era, which I've described before, of saying where economies are actually struggling. They're struggling with unemployment, and they are going to generally to have a more difficult time than the corporations are actually having, because the big autonomies that we like so much, they are global players, and so they're earning from customers in countries all over the world, and the employment problems that individual countries are experiencing are not something that is a factor or a problem. It's not a problem for the autonomies. If anything, it's in their favor because they can pick up the employees they need more easily. But the main factor here in terms of the autonomies is that they are increasingly becoming more efficient through technology, including the smart machines. And that's a very big theme. And anybody who looks or considers the technological advantages that you see and use yourself over the last decade, well, just think of it in terms of corporations and in terms of the just the industrialization of the internet, in terms of the big heavy manufacturing I could go on this topic because it's such an interesting one. But my point is that the future, which a lot of people have worried about and will continue to worry about, but my feeling is the corporate future over the longer, good lengthy longer term is more attractive than it's ever been before, and we have a global economy that is run on a largely on a capitalist model, whether it's command capitalism or democratic capitalism, and we have growing populations still. We have the rise of the middle classes. These are all incredibly powerful, bullish themes, which make me very, very optimistic in terms of another secular bull market, which I've predicted this year. I've said this year that it would be occurring throughout this year. I've said it would be occurring or underway before the end of this decade, and again fueled by technology and affordable energy. Although energy will be more affordable for some than others, depending on how quickly they get their acts together. But I don't want to belabor that point any further. Now, but what about the next few years? Could be choppy, not disasters. Where bear markets occur, it'll usually be because of significant problems of governance. And I'm not just talking about the U.S. Style of governance, but where you get countries that become dysfunctional and are actually falling apart. And unfortunately, there are always a few of those. But governance is everything. And you look at stock markets, and we never want to forget that. Classic example, I would say, right now is to pick one out, is India. Here you have this. Well, there's a lot to admire, and there's a lot to be appalled by. I admire the inventive qualities that we see within India for what is a very underdeveloped country overall. And there are a number of superb leading companies in India, and their management skills are considerable. But they've had bad governance, and so you've had all the corruption, so on. But you know what I'm leading on this. They've got this election next year in May, if not a little bit sooner, and India got a good pop to the upside on Monday because Narendra Modi and his party did extremely well in some of the preliminary elections, and that catapulted him to the front-running favored position for the big general election, say, which occurs during the first half of next year. Now, you've also got a good central bank governor in India. There are a lot of short-term problems, and so after that election result, well, the market hit a new all-time high and then has fallen back subsequently on Tuesday through Friday here because of higher food prices, higher inflation pressures, and the concern over whether the government would tighten interest rates a little bit further. So a lot of near-term problems, but what I think is quite possible, and what is certainly keeping me in my India investments, is that we could have not only a good central banker, which is always a plus for any economy or region such as Europe, but which also has a very good central banker, but we, I think, would have an outstanding government in terms of business savvy, good economic knowledge, and I think the economy is, or I beg your pardon, the electorate is hungering for somebody with that knowledge who can come in and stimulate GDP growth and I think they will they will make it happen. In other words, I think that Narendra Modi is going to be the next prime minister in India, barring some sort of accident, and that will be a very, very good thing. But on the governance issue here, when looking at emerging markets in particular, it really is such a crucial issue. Okay, moving onwards. What about these long-dated government bonds? Well, Owen's got some copy today, two different views, not surprisingly, with somebody saying that the bond market bull trend, after, despite being, if you still think it's intact, it would be beyond the age of 30, which is long in the tooth for secular market trends, but who feels that it's alive and well, and that we're going to have a lot of deflationary problems. That would not be good for stock markets, if he's right. And then Owen produced another report, which he's discussed, which is much more optimistic. I'm in the more optimistic camp here overall, in the sense that I'll go back to Reinhardt and Rogoff and saying 5 to 7 years at minimum following these credit crisis recessions, basically banking collapses and property market slumps and so on. And before you get back to anything close to normal GDP growth, and in some instances it actually takes longer. Well, we're coming up, we're approaching 5 years on that. So we have a few more years, I think, of slow growth, but gradually improving overall is my guess on that scene. And therefore, I think that this bond market, global bond market, and particularly take the U.S. bond market, it's the bull market in terms of total returns. And we have that in the chart library, and I think Owen's posting it today. We have that Merrill Lynch total return graph, which had produced such a long upward trend. So with bond yields coming down, and then the payments on those bonds providing this long, long bull market, I think that's over, and we may see, probably will see, a slow beginning to the overall bear trend, but that we do have a bear trend unfolding here over the medium to longer term in long-dated government bonds, and it's just not a sector that I like at all. And I think you'll do better, far better, in global stock markets. What about commodities? Not least the precious metals that a number of us are interested in. My feeling is that they're trying to bottom out, taking silver and gold in particular. I think they're trying to bottom out down near the lows that we had seen earlier in the year. Forgive my not total recollection of the exact chart dates on this, but I think it was back in in May or June that we saw those the lows, with gold a little bit under the $1,200 level. And I don't have confidence in saying that they show signs of bottoming out, because we still have overall downward trends, a lot of overhead supply. There are a lot of big short positions that are in the market as well, not least Goldman Sachs, and there's a lot of copy talking them down, talking the precious metals down. Well, if you're short, it's natural for people to talk markets down, If you're on the sidelines and watching, it's not a bad idea in terms of your prospects to see those markets actually go somewhat lower, because if we do, for whatever reason, get another 1,000 or two off gold, let's say gold came back to $1,000. That's not a forecast. It's a hypothetical situation. Let's say gold came back to $1,000, though, an ounce. And in my opinion, particularly if it did that quickly, it would just be absolutely outstanding. And I would go from a no position to an overweight position and ditto silver, which is, of course, high beta gold in terms of its overall performance. Platinum, looking interesting. How many of these South African platinum mines are going to be mothballed because of the labor unrest that we're seeing in that country? And it's the scarcest of the main precious futures traded precious metals. So I think that's an interesting sector, but for sometime next year, probably, rather than now. If it is bottoming out right now, I think we're going to see more ranging support building activity overall before we get any significant moves to the upside. But I think that's something that we can look forward to over the medium term, if not the short term. Regarding food prices, for the most part, we've had a good year in the sense that farmers have been able to grow their crops. And we haven't had the shortages. There's some stockpile rebuilding, which is very, very important overall. We could do with a few more years, but that's helpful for the global economy at a time when it needs a little help overall. I'm not looking to do much in commodities here in the short term. But I think the next big play will be some looking for some recovery candidates. But I won't chance my hand at that right now, except to say I think the industrial metals are in an overall bottoming out support building phase, and that could carry on for a while longer. Is likely to carry on for a while longer. Thinking about it, and just dropping back to stock markets just for a moment, one of the things that veteran subscribers will recall, one of the last signs of a mature bull market is that you get some very smart catch-up moves, and by that I mean very sharp catch-up moves, by cyclical laggards, and miners are certainly in that role here, and metal prices are certainly in that role right now. So I'm talking now about the industrial metals, and again, because people buy them because they're cheap relative to everything else as valuations have moved up and up in other shares. Now, that hasn't happened yet, so that's an argument that says, you know, markets are going to hold reasonably steady over the short to medium term. You know my view, I'm not looking for any big falls other than for one-off situations, usually involving governance issues. So again, I'm quite happy to hold a portfolio which has autonomies ride out some choppy volatility. I haven't been fortunate enough to have the ones that have actually shot the lights out, as it were, with spectacular performances. Although Atlantis China Healthcare Fund has that's qualified. That's had some awfully big gains. But I'm content to hold on to these. I think the medium to longer term outlook is generally favorable, as you know. Now, what about currencies? Comments here on currencies. We've got the yen at 103.2 against the US dollar, and I think the yen will weaken further. Certainly, the Japanese government wants the yen to weaken further to help pull out of its disinflationary, deflationary cycle and to give a boost to the export industries in Japan, and they need it, in my opinion. So I think that we'll see a we're not going to get a collapse of the yen. It's an overvalued currency, which is becoming less overvalued. That's the way I view it, and I think we will actually see that. On a longer term basis, I expect the dollar to be generally somewhat firmer than it is right now, but the Fed is very anxious to keep the dollar from going up here in the short to medium term, and so we're just seeing it range in what I think is a very lengthy base building process overall. And the drivers for that eventual recovery will be a competitively strong U.S. economy with the advantages which I was mentioning before at some length of energy costs advantages in the U.S. and also the accelerating technological lead. Among other major currencies, sterling, I think is unlikely to be well. I think sterling is in a recovery phase here overall, but I don't look for many big, really big moves in these currency markets. You know, we're in that situation where no country really wants a strong currency. Therefore, the one that surprises me the most is that the Chinese yuan has been has really been quite firm overall, remains so. But I don't look for too much drama. India is trying to the central bank is trying to control the rupee to prevent it from weakening again. Well, I noticed it nudged up above that 62 rupees to the US dollar here today. The central bank would like to keep it in the 62 to 60 rupee range. I think those are the main ones that I would talk about. And if you want comments, Australian dollar, I think we know that the Australian government is our central bank is very keen to prevent the Aussie from pushing higher in here, and they're meeting with some success overall. And I think again, we'll mostly have just general ranging rather than dramatic developments in the currency markets over the next few years. And I wouldn't want to try to make a longer term forecast than that. So, folks, I think that's pretty much it here. Overall, I'll just say that I hope you are finding your way around the chart library a little bit more easily now. Certainly, a lot of bugs have been removed, but there are a number that are still there, and we thank you for your patience and your goodwill on this. A lot of time and effort is being spent here to whip this back into not only the shape that you had had previously, but then to carry right on as we will throughout the end of this year and throughout all of next year, just upgrading, making it more effective enabling subscribers to annotate their charts, have more better indicators that we can utilize, all the things that we've wanted to do for the last many years, but we're not able to do so in our previous alliance. That's all to look forward to in 2014. And on that note, I will wish you a good evening. All the very best to all of you. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.